session number 11315, rule 2.
Mr. Young Realtor, you are describing this meeting in Hyde Park.
Well, as I say, it had been thought that they would probably end up in a good deal of trouble. But as it turned out, there was a lot of chaiiking from the opposition, and, you know, jeering and shouting. But eventually, Moseley did make his speech from this lorry in the drawn up on the grass, and then finally he planted himself at the head of his collection of black shirts, and they marched off to wherever they were finally ended up without any great trouble occurring. It had been a sort of a pleasant Sunday afternoon entertainment for the public, really.
Were the opposition trying to prevent him delivering his speech?
Well, there was a good deal, you know, jeering and shouting. You can imagine, jeering and shouting. And these were the people who'd come up from the East End, chiefly, I think, you know, to do a bit of quiet, noisy disruption.
What was your job at the time? Were you then working for
the... At that time, I was a reporter on the Daily Express.
What were your own feelings about the Moseley movement?
My own personal feelings, I didn't think much of it. Like most average people in the time, you thought they were an aggressive, noisy lot who were causing a great deal of unnecessary trouble, particularly down in the East End. But one had little sympathy for the cause as such.
Can we go on to the outbreak of the Second World War now? And can you tell me what job you had then?
At that time, I had become the night news editor of the Daily Express, a job in which I continued for the next 26 years.
Night editor?
Night news editor. News editor.
What did that involve?
Well, that involved going in at about 4:30, 4:45, and after the usual editorial conference, finally the news editor, the great famous Fleet Street character, J.B. Wilson, would hand over to me, and it was then my job, my responsibility, to deal with the news as it was coming in and to, you know, send the reporters out on jobs and that sort of thing. And that continued until about 2:30 or 3:00 in the morning.
Did your job bring you into much contact with Lord Beaverbrook?
Not really, no, because I was not a political man. You see, the people who had dealings with Lord Beaverbrook, intimate dealings, close dealings with Lord Beaverbrook, were chiefly the political people, people who were dealing with the political side of the newspaper.
Which famous characters on the Express did you come into close contact with?
Well, name them all. Strubey. George Strubey, the great cartoonist, Giles, Sefton Delmar,
can you tell me about Sefton Delmar, what you remember about him as a man and what his work was like?
Oh, Sefton Delmar, of course, was a great foreign correspondent. And, of course, he was in Berlin before the war. And right up to the beginning of the war, he was... his knowledge of Germany, of course, was fantastic. He's a very great foreign correspondent, Sefton Delmer.
What was he like as a man?
Well, I mean, my association with him was purely professional, and he was very friendly, very amusing, very informative, but I was never close friendship with him.
And Giles?
Oh, wonderful character. Wonderful man. Wonderful man. He, one time, beginning and before the war, he lived just down the road here.
This is in Finsbury?
In Finsbury, just down the road here. And then, of course, now he lives up near Ipswich, has a farm there, and he has all these extraordinary interests and abilities. Wonderful man, Giles.
Where do you think he got this idea for this famous family of his from?
I wouldn't know that.
What do you remember about the outbreak of the Second World War?
Well, I mean, I can remember that what we thought was we were going to be deluged with bombs. I was only living in the old vicarage over here in those days when the war started. And the first day of the war, the 3rd of September, the Sunday morning, when the Maroons went, I went, we had a flat roof, part of the roof was flat, going up there looking for the for the attacking, you know, we were expecting an instant raids on London at that time. But, of course, they never came.
What was your reaction to Chamberlain's announcement that we were at war with Germany? Were you dismayed about it?
Oh, not dismayed, because one expected it. One knew it was coming. There's nothing else we could do. I mean, we'd reached the end of the road as far as Hitler was concerned. No one, especially people like myself of my age who remembered the First World War, didn't favour war as such, but there comes a time when it's got to be, when aggression, barefaced aggression, has got to be resisted. And we knew that that point had been reached. And whether you liked war or whether you didn't, the time had come when this country had got to resist.
How did you react when the long period of phony war occurred and nothing seemed to happen except at sea for several months?
I don't know. It's difficult to say. You accepted. I think in those early days of the war, you accepted it from day to day. I mean, one never quite knew. I mean, in a newspaper office, you had all sorts of rumours kept on coming in, and one expected an explosion, you know, at any time. And you, as I say, you lived more or less on a day-to-day basis.
How was your staffing situation on the Express affected?
Well, we steadily lost all our young men. Most of our young men, you see, went off to the Navy and the Army, Air Force. And we gradually got shorter and shorter on the staff. And you just had to, you know, and the papers got smaller and smaller. And you just had to adjust.
What do you remember about Dunkirk?
Well, that was a time of, I can remember the enormous anxiety, because we knew in Fleet Street what was happening. That we knew a good deal about, more than the general public knew, what a desperate situation it was. And we also knew about these... about the great fleet of small ships that were going out to try and bring the men off. And it was you waited day by day to hear, you know, what the losses were and what the successes had been and how many men were being brought ashore and all that sort of thing.
Were you surprised in the end at how many were got off?
Oh, it was a great triumph. The rescue operation from the beaches of Dunkirk were one of the great feats of British history, in which, of course, you had just the ordinary civilians were taking a part. When you think of the men who went out on these. On this great extraordinary collection of craft which went out across the channel to bring these men off. And these weren't men who pretended to be sailors or, they were ordinary sort of men who reached beyond fighting, ordinary normal fighting years, most of them. But they went out and they brought the boys back. It was a great triumph.
Can we talk now about the summer of 1940 when, as people always say, Britain stood alone, Britain and the Empire?
Yeah.
Did you really think that the Germans would get across and invade then?
One thought that possibly they would make the attempt. I say the attempt at a landing. But I don't think any of us really thought that it would be successful. We thought there might be a parachute, an attempt by parachutists possibly in certain areas to capture certain points. We thought there might be some isolated raids here and there. But as for a mass invasion, no, we do. I don't think there was any great. It was always a possibility of the attempt would be made, but we didn't view it.
Did you see anything of the Battle of Britain between our fighters and the German Luftwaffe?
To the extent that one saw the extraordinary. Well, of course, most of the battle was taking place down on the southeast coast over Kent and Essex and down that the estuary all round there, and one often saw these extraordinary vapour streaks in the sky, but that from here in central London, that was about the most one saw of it until the real blitz on London started.
Was it a tense time when were you looking at the statistics of planes shot down on either side?
Well, of course, the great day in September, when it was reported that, what was the figure, 125, I think it was 125 was the figure claimed, German planes that had been shot down. I can't remember the exact date of it. Well, it was in the September. Was it 41? Or, yes,
1940.
Or 1940. I think it must. Yes, 1940 in the September. That I can remember being in the office on the Sunday and the thing going up on the board. You know. 50 down, 57, rather like the scoreboard at Lord's. When the final end up, we just said, we've won the war. And we had.
What about the beginning of the Blitz? Do you remember the start of the Blitz in London in that same month of September?
Oh, yes. I remember this. I can remember particularly one Saturday, standing on Waterloo Bridge with a great many other Londoners, looking down the east, down the river, and seeing the fires burning down the east end, which had been raided that more or less that afternoon, that early evening.
that was the first real experience of the Blitz that we had.
We hear about the mood of Londoners during the Blitz. What was your own personal experience of that, of public morale under the bombing?
Well, considering what the public went through, what ordinary people had to put up with, you know, nights, sleepless nights, living in shelters, suffering with their windows blown in with blast. You know, the morale was quite extraordinary. I'll tell you, the extraordinary thing was, the extraordinary experience was that I used to sleep in the office many nights. And I can remember our cleaners coming in, the early morning cleaners who used to arrive round about 6 o'clock. Some of these women had been up all night down in South London. And I can always remember one day I came out of our dormitory and saw about a dozen of them all grouped round a desk over far in the big room of the Express. And I thought, oh dear, 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 something terrible's happened to some of them, and they're, you know. So I went over and I said, good morning, ladies. And they said, oh, good morning. And I said, anything particular wrong? And then I saw somebody had brought in a collection of hats. God knows where she'd got them, but she'd got a whole collection of hats. Women's hats, headgear. And these women who'd had a night of surviving the Blitz were spending this time round this desk, not consoling one another, but selecting which hats they were going to purchase out of this collection of second-hand headgear. It was quite typical of the spirit of these extraordinary women, who, no matter the hell with the Germans, they had a job to do and they came in and did it, no matter what was happening.
Did you see anything of these notices that are said to have been outside shops saying business as usual and that type of thing?
Well, yes, I mean, people carried on. People, if a shop was blasted, had the windows blown in, they had to put something up, but they were conducting their business behind the repairs. So they just said, you know, something would go up, you know, business as usual. You know, some sort of phrase like that. Oh, the spirit of London was quite incredible. You had to have lived through it to know how rarely you saw any exhibition of real fear. I mean, people were sensible. They ducked out of range. But you didn't see panic, especially when there were daylight raids and you had this cuckoo business going.
Cuckoo?
What they called the cuckoo. You got a warning, you see, but then when a plane was approaching a certain area, well, when a plane was approaching over, say, a particular area like, Trafalgar Square, you had this sort of subsidiary warning sound, which was like a cuckoo, which was the warning that a planes are approaching this particular area, get under cover. Well, then people did get under cover. But taxis ran, people did their shopping. You just had to carry on.
Some people say that there was a mood of national unity during the Blitz.
Oh, yes, very much so, very much so. That, if people, one person was... had the house, blasted or hit or something had happened, neighbours would rally round, you know, produce meals and all sorts of things.
Did people feel that both rich and poor were in it together?
Everybody was in it together, especially in London. I mean, it was happening, and everybody sort of mucked in together.
Was there any kind of special policy in reporting the war at the Daily Express with regard to not damaging public morale?
Oh, yes. I mean, I mean, the object of the paper was to see victory, and you weren't going to depress people. I mean, we didn't obscure things, but you didn't go out. You didn't. I mean, the great thing was to keep the morale of the people going, and I think newspapers did a great job during the war. Splendid job.
Do you remember any of the important buildings like St. Paul's and the Houses of Parliament being hit? Did you ever go and see them?
Well, I naturally saw the great night when they bombed the city, you know, so much damage was done in the city, and seeing St. Paul's, going up on the roof, and our roof in Fleet Street, and seeing St. Paul's outlined against this background of fire and smoke, and, you know, this wonderful picture of that was taken by a photographer from one of the rooftops in Fleet Street, which has become almost a classic. I remember that so well. Remember the night that St. Bride's in Fleet Street was gutted by firebombs.
Whereabouts on Fleet Street were your officers?
Well, down the Ludgate Circus end. You know, we're the black glass building.
On the south or the north side of Fleet Street?
On the north side of Fleet Street, opposite the Press Association, opposite St. Bride's.
So close to the eastern end of Fleet Street?
Yeah, ma'am?
Close to the eastern end of Fleet
Street? Yes, near Ludgate Circus.
Was Fleet Street and Ludgate Circus themselves badly hit in the Blitz?
Oh, yes, there was a good deal of damage done there, right on the corner, you know, at the foot of the hill, just coming down from St. Paul's. There was a lot of damage done all up there and on Ludgate Hill and round various Fleet Street areas. And, of course, St. Bride's was completely burnt out.
What did people think of the royal family in the Blitz?
Pardon?
What did people think of the royal family in the Blitz?
Well, they were extremely popular because, I mean, they stayed in London or in Windsor. You had King George and Queen Elizabeth, you know, going round bomb sites and talking to the people, and after a bad raid, Buckingham Palace had their own experience of bombing.
What did people in London feel about the air crews, the German air crews that were doing the damage? Did they hate them because of it?
I don't think so. I mean, after all, by the later in the war, you know, our air force were hitting back. I don't think so. I don't think the feeling you felt. You disliked Mr. Blimmin' Goering was the one that you. I mean, but you couldn't blame particularly the chaps who were in the planes who were doing the bombing, because I think you knew that they were, after all, were acting under orders. I mean, they couldn't. Not much else they could do.
Coming on to 1941, do you remember the entry of Russia into the war with the German attack of June 1941?
Yes, I remember it, yes. I remember it happening.
Did that come as a surprise, or had you expected that?
Well, I think it was rather expected among the political people. I mean, your interests were concentrated on what was happening more or less on your doorstep. I mean, you were so in London, in the Blitz, you were so much in the front line that was your interest. It was what was happening in London, wondering what was going to happen next when you heard about that this we heard, certain of us knew about that the flying bomb had been invented, and we were waiting, wondering when that was going to be used. And then we heard the stories about these rockets, which were the next wonder that the Nazis had dreamt up, and we were wondering what effect those were going to have.
Do you remember the first V1s coming into London?
I remember very vividly the first night of the flying bombs. There was a certain degree of it was an extraordinary experience, because we knew, certain of us, by there were certain D notices issued, you see, which people doing key jobs in newspaper offices knew about, were shown, and you had to keep in mind. Well, we knew that the flying bombs were projected, and I remember this night sitting at my desk, and then the roof spotters started ringing down saying, "My God, they've shot two down over the East End," and you'd say, "Well, whoopee," and then the next little bit later, "Good gracious, another two of three down." And then you excited men on the spotters seeing these things going, they thought that planes were being shot down. And those of us in the know said, "Oh, this is the start of the flying bombs. These aren't planes they're shooting down. These are these flying bombs." And that was the start of the flying bombs.
How frightening were they?
Bimmer?
How frightening were they?
How frightening?
Yes.
Well, they were, because you had this extraordinary, they came over very low, you see, and you could see the blooming things, and you had this chug, 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 chug noise from them, and that you knew that as long as the thing was chugging, that it would go, you know, and you, the danger was, you knew, the moment of truth came when the chugging stopped, and then it nosed up.